Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Dr. Carla Hannaford, who's the author of Playing in the Unified Field, Raising and Becoming Conscious, Creative Human Beings. Carla is a biologist, an educator by trade. She has 40 years of teaching experience, including 20 years teaching biology at the university level, and is now an internationally recognized educational consultant, does workshops, lectures, and is exploring the unified field and how we create in it. Welcome, Carla. Thanks for getting up early.
Thank you, Susan.
So where do you live in Hawaii?
I'm on the Big Island. I'm in Kona.
Oh, yeah. you and I had similar experiences in 2006. Where we had to have fairly significant physical challenges.
Yes.
I broke my arm, my left arm, fortunately. I fell in the office over a trip cord and that my maintenance guy had left.
Oh my God.
The only place in the planet that I was guided to go, and actually I went twice. I went once with a friend of mine who's a paramedic, and then the next time with a friend of mine who was a nurse, was the Big Island, because it was the only place that would ground me. I had a lot of Neptune in my chart, and I felt like I was on drugs. And the weird thing was, I was only taking Motrin for the pain. I don't like narcotics at all.
Uh-huh.
And so I explored the Big Island in a time of crisis where I needed severe grounding, which it provided.
It's a very grounding place.
It is. It is. It's an amazing place. It's almost like another planet.
It is.
Very different. So how long have you lived there?
I've been here since 81. So a long time. I came over to... They were just bringing the University of Hawaii over from Manoa and needed a biologist. So I came.
Well, biology is my first love. It's what I've always gravitated to. But I was
fascinating.
Really is. I was guided to be a surgeon, which is biology in action, I think.
Right.
Well, tell us a little bit about your journey and your getting familiar with consciousness research, which you've put a lot of this in the book, Playing in the Unified Field, and what you've learned.
You know, I guess I've always been a real nature kid. In the summers, we were always on a farm in Iowa. And during the rest of the year, I was in the mountains in Utah. And I've always kind of been a loner and out in the woods. And I just was fascinated by what nature could teach me. And then, of course, I got involved with education. I didn't read till I was 10. And, at that time, it wasn't a big deal because they didn't have special ed. And somehow I made it through at the age of 10 to be able to read. And my daughter, when she started struggling with the same kind of thing, I started looking at alternatives of ways to learn. And so I started putting those together. And again, she grew up in the Montana woods. And so there was always this, okay, how does the mind work? How do we learn? How does nature, how do we come from that nature space to learn? And as I've been working lately with quantum physics, of course, we find that what's really important is being absolutely present, absolutely aware, experiencing the world. Consciousness researchers have finally come to a definition of consciousness, and it's experience. It's experiencing the world through our bodies, being very, very aware of the world. and then taking that information in. I went into neurophysiology because that was fascinating to me. And, of course, that was the brain. And in the 1990s was the decade of the brain, and we were focusing very heavily on the neocortex and saying the rest of the body was pretty unimportant and the rest of the brain was pretty unimportant. And a thing happened in 1999 with Gerd Kepperman and Fred Gage at the University of California. They discovered that we're actually growing new nerve cells until the day we die, as many as 60,000 new nerve cells a day in an area of the brain called the hippocampus, which, of course, is the memory area of the brain. And Henrietta von Prague at Marion Diamond's laboratory in Berkeley decided to try to figure out exactly what it was that allowed us to grow these new nerve cells. It was interesting. Marion Diamond had discovered 20 years earlier that rats and mice were growing new nerve cells in the hippocampus. And we, being human, said, we don't do that. We're not rats and mice. And then to find out that indeed we were doing exactly what the rats and mice were doing. And so Henrietta went back to look at, okay, what was it in an enriched environment that allowed us to grow these new nerve cells? And Marion Diamond had set up what was an enriched environment. An enriched environment was fresh air, good food, toys, playmates, space. So Henrietta took apart these pieces, and what she discovered is that it was running wheels, that it was movement, that it was cross-lateral integrative movement. And so we started really looking at that. And now, if you'll notice, these brain conferences, they're no longer brain conferences. They're body-mind conferences. And what we really know is that if we didn't move, we wouldn't need a brain. The whole brain is organized and orchestrated around movement. And the neocortex is sort of the last to get it. You know, the body takes in the world through sensory information and then processes it through the lower parts of the brain, the cerebellum, the brainstem, the limbic system, the emotional centers. And then finally, the brain kind of puts it together into our reality. So consciousness actually comes from experience. And the subconscious is probably 98% of what happens in our body. And we're tying into some very interesting fields, a non-local, entangled field that encompasses everything and everybody. So it's pretty exciting. We're much bigger than we thought we were.
Right. Yeah, we are. Absolutely. And we're tied into really the universal mind at a level higher, probably vibrating higher than our physical reality. You may have heard that Edgar Cayce had problems learning.
Mm-hmm.
So he used to sleep on his books and learn that way.
Uh-huh.
So I was thinking while you were describing this that that would be a good example of using something other than traditional ways of learning.
Right. I slept on my books.
There you go. So what's happening with that? I mean, is that kind of a an entanglement, creating an entanglement?
It is. Actually, anything that we take in, we're taking it in, and then when we sleep, there's an interesting thing that we've just discovered. When we sleep, there's a time of very deep sleep where we're actually sending information into, hardwiring it into long-term memory. And so we need sleep in order to do that. And so Edgar Cayce knew that. I mean, probably somehow got some information from the books. And and words are interesting. You know, I'm trying to think of his name, the Japanese researcher. I talk about him in my book. Morimoto, who would put words on water, mm-hmm. and they would change the vibrational structure of water. And so, you know, 90% of our brain is water. And so possibly that was what was happening, is that we are changing the crystalline structure of the water within our brain to take in that information.
Well, when I do applied kinesiology, I just write the name on a piece of paper when I'm testing, like antibiotics, antifungals, or whatever, mm-hmm. supplement, and uh-huh. have the patient hold it. And that way, they don't know and I don't know what it is. So,
right.
And obviously, I've got
so
patients
the subconscious.
Who are, I've got patients who are like allergic to vancomycin.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other antibiotics are strong if they have an infection, but vancomycin, mm-hmm. they can't hold their arm up, and it happens again
right.
and again. There was a patient I had from the CDC who had a complicated infection, and I was had to treat her with an antibiotic and antifungal, and I put a bunch of them on paper, and she made me do it 8 times, got the same answer. And then she said, maybe we should be using this. I said, yeah, maybe you should.
Uh-huh.
With antibiotics.
It's a vibration.
It is.
You know, sound is a vibration. Words are a vibration. Everything's a vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And how does it relate to our own well-being? You know, I know there are all sorts of things coming out. Oh, you need to eat this, or you need to do that, or you need to this or that. You know, I know for me, everybody goes, oh, you need magnets.
mm-hmm.
And my good friend Susan Kovalik was using magnets in her shoes because she was, as I am, standing, you know, for 10 hours a day lecturing or doing workshops.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to say lecturing because I never lecture. It's always very experiential. But still, I'm on my feet for 10 hours a day, and I thought, mm-hmm. oh, this would be great. It's helping Susan. And yet every time I would, you know, stand in her shoes on those magnets, my arm would go down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
My whole body would lose energy. And so the vibration of those magnets for me does not work, but for other people it does.
Yeah, and there's a lot of different kinds of magnets, too. I mean, different uh-huh. companies use different, theories with the magnet. So just uh-huh. magnets are not one thing, just like, you know,
no.
Meat is not one thing. You know, some meat
right.
probably good for you, other meat probably not. You know?
Right.
So
yeah,
you should test everything.
Uh-huh.
We just recently, one of my friends got a one of the Corinian photography machines,
uh-huh.
and
right.
I'm using some technology from Zero Point to help balance myself, and it was a great way to test it. So I took all the technology off, and my chakras were lined up, except my heart was out to the right, which means that I'm giving my heart energy to others, which I do in my job, and my base chakra was off to the left, which meant that I had some physical, threats, which I do as the author of a book that I wrote, a whistleblower
uh-huh.
book. And when I put the technology on, everything lined up perfectly. So it was an interesting, because it was the only time I'd ever, because normally I don't wear stuff, but uh-huh. if I left home without this particular pendant, I was guided uh-huh. to go back and get it. Isn't that interesting? It's the only time in my life that's ever happened. Because, you know, any time else I was wearing something, it wouldn't matter, because it didn't matter.
Right.
And so it's very interesting. You can show with these devices which measure field energy that sometimes, number one, what's out of balance, and number two, what you get do to get it back in.
Right. It was real interesting. I was in Germany doing a conference, and they had the gas discharge visualization bioelectrography machinery there that has been developed by Konstantin Korotkov.
Yeah, that's the machine we were using.
That's the machine.
Yeah, because I've got both of his books.
It's really fascinating. It's very scientific, very connected. You see your whole field of what is on and what is off. It's very interesting. Really exciting.
We did a whole day of it at the clinic, measuring different people, some with emotional things, some with physical things, some with weird diseases like RSD, reflex sympathetic dystrophy, things that are not that common. That I wanted to see what the field looked like.
It's very interesting. You know, the fact, all of the work that's been done now by Popp on the fact that we are light, Franz Albert Popp's work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're vibration, we're light, we're vibrational interference patterns, we're not solid.
and
our brain waves, you know.
And what it's coming down to is that the world that we see is actually not the same for each of us, because you've got a good diagram in your book about all the different things that things get processed through, and that processing is what we project. I mean, think about it, a dog lives in a totally different world than we do because of hearing and smelling way out from what we do, and our sight is different. I think dogs don't see as many colors. And certainly if you go down to a butterfly, I mean, a butterfly's world is totally different than what we see. So probably the world out there is not set in any means. It's just simply a product of these signals going through the different receptors we have, and then our brain puts them all together.
Right. And what's interesting, too, is that we manufacture our reality. We have all of these spam filters that are set up according to, you know, what our parents, even before birth, what our parents feel. After birth, you know, what our culture tells us is true and real. And we really have limited realities. And that's, you know, what quantum physics is showing us right now, is that we have totally limited who we believe we are, and we are very powerful beings. We create our own reality. You know, we organize our world around this reality, and it's not real. You know, it's much broader, it's much deeper, and we are much more powerful than we believe we are.
And our perceptual abilities are actually much greater than what we experience just on a day-to-day basis. Like you said, the experiment where they had children playing in a yard, and the parents were off to the side, and they had, you know, friendly adults and friendly animals walk by, and nothing happened. Then they had convicted child molesters walk by, and the children went toward the parents without
immediately
even realizing why they did.
The point is that between these children and the convicted criminal and also these friendly people was a soccer field, 100 yards. It wasn't right next to them. They weren't walking by them. They were 100 yards away. And the children were able to pick this up. What we've done as adults is we've blocked a lot of our sensory input so that we're not aware. Rivlin and Gravel at Princeton University discovered that there are at least 19 senses that we know of receptor sites for. There are probably hundreds of senses. Children are still very, very aware, and we tend to start blocking that awareness early in them. I know a lot of times parents will take children, go to relatives and say, oh, give Uncle Charlie a hug. And the baby doesn't want to do that. Because Uncle Charlie at that moment may be fearful or angry or upset or what we call incoherent. Mm-hmm. And the baby is picking up that incoherence.
Right.
And does not want to be in that vibrational field. Mm-hmm. And yet our egos, are saying, no, you have to give Uncle Charlie a hug.
Right.
So when we do that, the baby says to themselves, oh, I can't trust my inner knowing. And so they start to shut down that intuitive sense that we all have that is so vital for us being able to take in the world around us and know if we're safe or not. And also, bring in what is actually there past our filters, past these spam filters.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can see the world. I've worked a lot in Africa and in villages, small villages up in the mountain of Lesotho, the mountains of Lesotho. And there, everyone is what we would say psychic. I mean, they're all very aware. They're all very intuitive.
It's a natural state for them.
Yeah. We haven't shut that off. They haven't. And the children are able to know if you're safe or whatever. And they know what you're thinking. They know who you are.
Right.
They can really see us. I think we're in a time right now when we've got to come back to that. And I think, our modern media is really playing on that. Things like Avatar, the movie Avatar, where they say, I see you. Swahili, the greeting in Swahili is jumbo. And it's the greeting that they all give each other in Swahili, and it means, I see you. I see you. And you're seeing this person pass all the lenses, all these perceptual lenses that we have built up in our reality to really see the person. And, here we are in the United States right now, and we're labeling everybody. I'm working in schools all the time, and we're labeling these children. We're saying they're developmentally, delayed, or they have attention deficit hyperactive disorder, or they're special ed, or they're dyslexic, or they're one thing after another. They're autistic, or they're Asperger's.
Yeah.
And these children are sensitive. Extremely sensitive. Yeah, they still have. They're able to see beyond our limited reality. And schizophrenics, we're now seeing, are people that have many gifts at being able to see beyond our limited reality.
Mm-hmm.
And, we need to let go of those labels, and we need to look closer and really see the beings. And in my book, I talk a lot about sentience and the sentient beings, and we're not it alone. My cats are so aware. I mean, when I start to work with somebody that is having difficulties and I'm working with kinesiology, they come from out of the woodwork, these kitties, and they're right there, and they'll maybe even jump up on the massage table where the person, when I'm working with the person, and lie on them, you know, somewhere, and they're just healing them.
Yeah,
you know,
I had,
it's really amazing.
I had patients describe when they had breast surgery, they would have a cat that maybe was not real affectionate normally and never slept on their bed, but the cat would jump up and just lay on their chest.
Yeah.
And they would go, why is this cat, like, suddenly laying on my chest where normally it would have nothing to do with me? And I thought that was hilarious, you know?
They are. It is. Well, the purring, you know, every now and then, my back, like you with your broken arm, you know, I ended up having back surgery after quite a lot, 7 months of extreme pain and sciatica down both legs. But my kitties would come and lie right against my back and purr. Mm-hmm. And that purring, it's interesting, the scientists have discovered it's between 25 and 50 hertz cycles per second. And it's the same vibration that they have in TENS units that they give to people for healing bones.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Well, we certainly do need to get back more to taking in more types and kinds of information, and then we'd be a lot more at peace with our environment, I think.
Yeah. We have people out there telling us this all the time. Eckhart Tolle and Thich Nhat Hanh and way back when, Be Here Now, Ram Dass.
Right.
It's just really being conscious, being absolutely aware, experiencing our world deeply.
It's also...
And we're so distracted.
Yeah, it's also communicating. Our meditation group is meeting three times a week now, and so the communication is, you know, more where you're in total communication with spirit rather than just on a you know, minute-to-minute basis. But communication, you really can get information that you need for in the moment. And I think that once we realize that and we all tune into that, life is going to be a lot easier for all of us. It'll certainly be a lot safer because it'll, like the animals being guided up the hills before the tsunami, we will be guided out of the way before, you know, the earthquake or the, you know, tornado or whatever is coming.
Yeah. It's to really listen. It's interesting. In the Bible, the most used word in the Bible is listen.
Yeah.
You know, if we are really aware, like you say, you know, being in communication with the higher vibrational systems, you know, the maybe what we call God, what we call spirit, the angels, just being really aware of what is guiding us, you know. And it has to be easy.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not fun, if it's not easy, if it's not just flowing, it's not where it's at.
Well, the you know, as you said before, the children have it. Our pets have it. The animals in the wild have it. So we had it. We somehow lost it. You know, we can get it back.
Right. It's that childlike nature. You know, being really childlike.
Right.
Realizing that I have never, ever been in this place at this time, at this moment. I will never be here again.
Right.
Everything is new. Everything is, you know, every moment is a learning moment. Every time, you know, is brand new. And children see it that way. If we can see through the eyes of children, we have that funny saying in the United States, been here, done that.
Yeah.
We've never been here. We've never done this before. We'll never do it again.
Right.
And so life becomes an adventure, you know, and it's exciting.
And you haven't shut down all the possibilities. Yeah, they talked about, you know, the basketball court of possibilities. If you only see one possibility coming out of the present, then you've shut all the other possibilities off, and chances are that one possibility is what's going to be next.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if you don't do that, if you just leave them all open, and then at a higher level, trust that you can choose the best possibility. And, and I think that's the trust aspect. Trusting that what comes next is actually the highest and good. And all. Mm-hmm. If you don't see it that way, then you need to ask for guidance to understand why that is. You know, when I broke my arm, you might think that that would be horrible for a surgeon, but actually later on I was interviewing Colette Baron Reed, who is working with Sylvia Brown, and she said, oh yeah, you were going to get cancer, and now you're not. So, you know.
Yes, exactly, yeah. I needed to stop. You know,
right,
my back was doing this, and I'd said to people, you know, if I don't stop, my body's going to stop me.
Right.
And it did. And the learning that occurred was so profound during that time of healing. You know, because I couldn't do anything else. I had to stop. I had to get present.
Right.
I had to, you know, just let go of all the distractions.
And it's interesting because we both had this major physical challenge that was a major lesson in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Well, it's a shaman's journey, I really feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, Candace Pert talks about us conditioning our environment with our beliefs.
Uh-huh.
You know, so just what you were saying, what we put out is what comes back. We are the creators. We have to remember that. We are creating our reality. And so taking responsibility for that. And so what am I creating? Dr. William Tiller, you know, is showing this. He's, I think, one of the greatest scientists of our time. And he says, you know, we have these, our systems are made up of atoms, yes. But we are actually, in the atom, 99.9999% of the atom is space.
Mm-hmm.
But that space is not empty. It's full of what he calls reciprocal space. And within that space, it's magnetic energy. It's very high energy. When you put your fingertips together and you're feeling that other finger, what you're feeling is actually that magnetic energy rather than the atomic energy, the electrical energy. You're feeling that magnetic energy. And bringing that magnetic energy into physical beingness, which is the electrical energy, in between that are deltrons. He calls them deltrons. They're our wishes, our desires, our beliefs, you know, that specific belief. In the Buddhist tradition, there are these three levels. There's formlessness, there is belief, and then there is form. And we're seeing in quantum physics that it's the same thing. So how, what we choose, what are our wishes? What do we see in our world? How do we see our world? Is this magical? Is it beautiful? Is it interesting? Is it fascinating? That's what we're going to bring in.
And what's interesting is that by paying attention to what your wishes are, you can sort of see what your future will be.
Right.
Because your wishes are not really coming from your separated self.
Right.
They're coming from the part of yourself that's connected to the whole. So when you wish for something that seems out of balance with or just counter to what you think you are, you may see what you're becoming.
Right.
So that's what I do. I pay attention to all these things because I think that it's it's a big puzzle that you put together to really see where you're going.
Yeah.
Because your life takes turns, and not always are you doing that consciously.
Uh-huh. In fact, I think most of the time it's subconscious.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you start wishing for, say, you start wishing that, like, you're studying animals of Africa, and you have them all around you, and you watch movies, and you really like them, you may have Africa in your future.
Uh-huh.
You see?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting that...
I think it's not just wishing. We're choosing. We're intentioning. Mm-hmm. And I think someday we will be so responsible that we'll say, I choose this. And that's exactly what will occur to us quickly, rather than, you know, we have to go through a lot of the perceptual lenses, seeing this and this and this. The path opens up, continuously opens up to us.
Well, from what I understand about the third dimension, because of its density, everything here is slowed down. So.
Yeah.
Although we're the same beings in all of the dimensions because we're interdimensional, our third dimensional selves are slowed down. You know,
yeah.
We can't create as quickly because of the laws of duality. And we have resistances and, you know, when you build something up and something tries to tear it down. But it's sort of a training school. I tell people that, well, when you come to the third dimension, it's like being thrown into... the swimming pool with your full gear on as they swim, you know. So,
right.
But in actuality, we're all very good swimmers, but maybe not so good with all the, you know, the 100 pounds of gear on.
Right.
But,
it's interesting that Einstein says matter is nothing more than energy vibrating at a frequency slow enough that we perceive it with our senses.
Right. Yeah.
Ties right in.
It's not a separated thing. It's just our perceptual tools that create our reality in the way we see it. I was watching, last weekend, I was watching a show that Morgan Freeman was narrating on dark matter and dark energy.
Uh-huh.
And that is fascinating because it turns out that the scientists are telling us that dark matter is necessary to hold galaxies together, because if you didn't have it, the galaxies would fly apart, whereas dark energy is necessary for the galaxies to be flinging away from each other like they are. Without dark energy, it wouldn't. So it occurred to me that dark matter and dark energy might actually be being perceived from a, they're probably fourth dimensional, but we're perceiving them from the third dimension, but we can't see them because they're actually fourth dimensional, but we're feeling their effects, and we can measure their effects on the whole. And then the next thought that came, and this was actually in session, is that really none of the dimensions are separate from each other. It's all a continuum.
Right. Entangled.
Right. Entanglement. Yeah. So really, we're not, I mean, the dark matter and dark energy is evidence now, because it's actually in science that we are multidimensional.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And we just need to come to that. We need to stay with it. I think it's interesting, just probably the greatest governor within our body is our heart. And One of the things that we're realizing is the heart controls the brain and not the other way around. And that the heart is probably, you know, when we think of ourselves, is probably the major step-down transducer of energy. We know the gut has done this too, but the heart seems to be the main field because it's the largest field in our body, where it slows the vibrational energies down enough that we can perceive them with our senses. And,
yeah,
that's exciting, you know. In many traditions, all the Oriental traditions, mm-hmm. the heart is the center, has always been the center. The brain is not that important. And
well, that's probably because the information coming through the feeling nature has a lot more validity and plays out better than the thinking information.
Right.
It's more limited. Like, yeah. I would always feel, and the information was that was coming in through the feeling nature, I would see somebody and I would feel that they wouldn't be here very much longer, and mm-hmm. and they wouldn't. They would die shortly, even if they were, you know, old. That mm-hmm. information is a lot more thinking, oh, that person's, you know, 10 years old. They'll probably, statistically, it'd be unlikely for them to die shortly.
Right.
So.
Yeah, we have to trust our emotions. I mean, they're the center, the core of who we are. They're our energy and motion, our motivation, our guide to where things are, who we are. Yeah. But it's interesting, the work that's been done with the heart. And we know that when we are absolutely present, absolutely clear and open, the heart is in a very coherent space and we're able to take everything in. The studies they've done with the monks around the Dalai Lama, who as they meditate, for a long time we thought meditation would go into delta brain waves or even theta mm-hmm. brain waves and maybe alpha. But what we're finding is with these monks, they actually go into gamma brainwave activity, which is very fast brainwave activity, where what Amit Goswami calls we're doing quantum tunneling when you go into these gamma waves, where you go past all these perceptual lenses and you really understand at a deep level mm-hmm. everything.
Well, I think we're supposed to be in that at all times.
Yeah.
Or especially times when we need information. And I think eventually we will be
yeah.
in that state of knowingness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why...
Well, we're constantly coherent.
Right, right. And that's why it's been interesting. The last few months we've been meditating 3 times a week
mm-hmm.
for several hours, sometimes 3 hours. And
mm-hmm.
that's made the times between the meditation be more able to get information
mm-hmm.
more quickly and clearly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think practice is, especially with a group, I think the monks meditate in a group too.
Right.
The individual meditation is wonderful, and mm-hmm. we recommend it for health benefits, but if you're trying mm-hmm. to do spiritual work, group meditation is a little more... effective.
And I think it's important to note, too, that you don't have to meditate by just sitting. You know, I meditate by walking.
Yeah.
You know, in nature.
True.
And that's, you know, if I can just go into nature and I'm absolutely, absolutely present,
mm-hmm.
things come to me instantly. And, you know, Einstein talked about that. You know, he'd be working on something really hard, trying to figure it out, and it was like, enough, I can't do this. And he would take a walk in nature, and
mm-hmm.
instantly the information
right. it would connect
come.
Back.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, you know, just being, absolutely being coherent, being present,
mm-hmm.
I think is what we're being asked to do right now. In every moment, and it's so difficult. There's so much distraction. But just being present in the milieu. And when we are, the heart, the brain are functioning clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And our whole immune system is bolstered. You know, we're not going to get sick. We're not going to... And we'll know. We'll know exactly what to do, just what you were saying.
That happens when you're doing surgery, by the way.
Mm.
You're totally focused, totally present,
mm-hmm.
and totally open to other information coming in that's real important.
I bet.
Especially if it's a kind of dangerous surgery.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's exactly that.
Uh-huh.
Like a walk in nature, but you're walking through the human body.
You're walking through the human body.
Right, right.
Or when suddenly you're writing a poem or you're painting something. For me, when I'm just playing my violin and I'm absolutely in the moment. Yeah. Creating.
So do you have a website or any contact information you'd like to give out?
I do. It's through my publishers. And you can go to Great River Books. So information at greatriverbooks.com or www.greatriverbooks.com. It's probably the best way to get information.
So, do you have a schedule of your workshops, or is that on that same website?
That'll be on that website.
Okay. And let's see, you have a couple of videos.
A couple. There's one called Education in Motion,
uh-huh.
And just works with cross-lateral integrated movements, and the work of educational kinesiology or the brain gym work. There's also one that I do with Candace Pert that Emotions, the Gateway to Learning.
And there's a lot of information about that subject in this book, too.
Uh-huh.
The book, Life and the Unified
Field. Yeah. I think probably the pulling together all the information is in my book, Playing in the Unified Field, Raising and Becoming Conscious Creative Human Beings.
Yeah, I've been doing this radio show for over 15 years, interviewing an author a week. And so I've interviewed, I think Dr. Amit Goswami about 6 times, and Dr. Tiller, and I've not interviewed Candace Pert, but I've read her book. I've invited her for an interview, but I guess she's busy. And, I was real familiar with many of the different things that you've brought together here. Research.
Right.
The scientific research. And you've done a great
job. It's so important right now. I think radio programs like yours and things that are happening now in the media, all throughout the media, are giving us a lot of information that are really important.
Yeah, I love the, Morgan Freeman's, I think it's called Through the Wormhole is the name of the show.
Uh-huh.
There's also The Universe that Maku Kichu, he's one of the founders of the Superstring Theory. I had interviewed him before. But if you put the Superstring Theory, the Quantum Theory, and then this new information about dark matter and dark energy together. Mm-hmm. I'd read the Caltech course on that, but I thought they did a much better job on, last week on Through the Wormhole explaining it, because it actually had all the diagrams and pictures and all the experiments
right.
lined up so you could really understand it. I think that it's coming into physics. I think the consciousness, the conclusions of the consciousness research throughout the ages is now actually coming into physics in terms of pretty solid evidence. What we've been talking about today, that what we see
Very
out there
solid.
Is actually illusionary and is not all that is. And is different for each of us.
Right.
That's why you can't get witnesses in the crime scene to agree what they saw.
Right.
I mean, they're seeing different movies.
They're seeing different movies.
That's
it's
right.
very, very solid. It's very solid. You know, and the other thing that's happening, I think, too, is I saw a movie just recently called I Am, and it's looking at Lynn Margulis from Princeton University. In studying cellular evolution, the only way we evolve is through communication and cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, this is another thing that we're being asked to do, is really communicate and cooperate. Right. Evolution is not about survival of the fittest. It's about cooperation and realizing that we're all connected, you know, coming to that altruistic place of realizing that we are absolutely entangled, absolutely connected, and we have got to be responsible, you know, in our own lives for, you know, seeing the other person, seeing the other beings, and honoring them, honoring the earth, honoring everything, being present.
I think that's absolutely true. Well, we're coming up to the end of our hour. We've been interviewing Dr. Carla Hannaford, Playing in the Unified Field, Raising and Becoming Conscious Creative Human Beings. And next week we're going to be interviewing Jonas Elrod, the director of Wake Up, which is a DVD. Then we'll have P.H.M. Atwater back on the 16th, Near-Death Experiences, The Rest of the Story. And then on the 23rd, Dr. Charles Skillis, hypnotherapist here, Defeat the Enemy Within. And then on the 30th, Michael Murray, What in the World Are They Spraying? In July, we have a Noetic Science meeting, which is always the third Thursday. That is July 21st at the Dunwoody office. Our guest speaker will be Dr. Jeffrey Commoner, and he will be discussing five things to better your health, a workshop, including teaching applied kinesiology, as well as building up some exercises with Qigong to build up your energy and other things as well. There will be no wellness event in July. We'll resume again in August. And we invite you to come back every week for Temple of Health Radio Show. Carla, thanks so much for joining us and getting up at 6 in the morning in Hawaii.
Thank you, Susan. It was nice talking with you.
Nice talking to you, too.
Aloha.
Aloha.